It's Thursday. It's July 16th. I was going to go and point out famous birthdays on this day, July 16th, but I never got around to it. So we'll save the birthdays.
I can give you two.
Really?
Yeah. Gareth Bale.
Gareth Bale.
And Sergio Busquets, I believe, is also July 16th.
And Sergio Busquets.
Yeah, it's a good date, I think.
Yes, for footballers who play in the Clásico, whose name starts with a B.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Happy birthday to everybody who was born on July 16th as well.
Okay, as much as I love idle chit-chat, let's rattle through the show because we're all busy, and so are you, listener. Liverpool will not be breaking the points record in the Premier League. We will be discussing that. And look, if you're going to screw up, you know, say it, go big or go home, right? Get your two best defensive players to go and chuck it away. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking, obviously, in the quick hit, some of the fallout from Manchester City, the Court of Arbitration of Sport ruling, and a lot of the sniping going back and forth. But I think we need to speak of the Juventus meltdown. And it's a sign of the times, Jules, that Juventus, they again, barring some act of divine intervention, they will win Serie A this season. They may even go on to win the Champions League. But man, oh man, this is a major, major meltdown. 3-3 against Sassuolo. Yeah. They give up a two-goal lead. You grew up 2-0 after 15 minutes. No, in Italy, this is a mortal sin.
Yeah.
This is like,
and especially when you've been used of this Juve team under Allegri, who was the master of controlling games, especially when you were in the lead. And now suddenly, against Milan a week ago, you 2-0 up and you concede 3 goals in 5 minutes and you lose 4-2. And you think, okay, this can happen, I guess. Even Sarri, after the game against Milan, said, I can't explain it. Those kind of things happen. Well, now you can explain it. You can see that they have just no ways of being able to control a game when the opposition is very lively, is very well drilled, in the sense that, you know, I don't know, they were trying to put pressure on Sassuolo, and that press was pointless.
And let's be clear on this. I mean, Sassuolo, one of the stories of the season.
Yeah, lovely team.
Their manager, Roberto De Zerbi, what I love about this guy is, I mean, we've talked before about how you have so many Italian teams. It really has been a sea change. They play open, attacking football. They say, let's go for it. That's very, obviously, the steps away from the tradition, the stereotype of Serie A. What also is away from it is that Sassuolo really had nothing to play for. I mean, they've gone on this run. Now, in theory, they could get a Europa League spot. And yet, they're saying, all right, you know, screw this. Let's go for it. Let's attack. And they've put together this tremendous string of results. They could have scored 6 or 7 in this game. Wojciech Szczęsny
had an incredible game.
Some incredible saves. A goal line clearance from Alexandro in the second half. And what struck me, Jules, is they speak to Sarri after the game. And it's a little bit like you said, except it seems like every time there's a new issue, right? He kept with a theme. Oh, yeah, it's like against Milan where, you know, we play really, really well in spurts. We go 2-0 up. And then we kind of lose it. And he doesn't elaborate.
Yeah.
And then they point out to him, and then this is what I find interesting, because against Milan, the issue was against Atalanta, Juventus couldn't get out, right? Because Atalanta were pressing them and whatever. This time, the issue was a different one. They pointed out to him that, hey, it seems like Sassuolo were always getting space in between the lines, in between the midfield and the defense. And he says, yeah, that's exactly what was happening. I noticed it too. Thing is, our central defenders, they started defending very, very deep, and there was a gap between the midfield and the defense, and Sassuolo kept getting in there. I'm like, okay.
Do something.
You've noticed it.
Yeah.
Do something.
I know.
Bonucci and De Ligt, right? One of them is, Bonucci wasn't there, but it was Chiellini started the game, and then in the second half, obviously, it was Rugani. But you guys read the game. Do something. Tell them you're sitting too deep. If you think that's the problem.
And I was surprised when Dybala didn't start, I have to say, because I think, okay, Cristiano has been scoring loads of goals, but your most informed player surely is Dybala. And although Higuain scored, and okay, give him credit for the goal, I didn't think he did much in that game. And I just thought Juve would have been far stronger with Dybala from the start. I have to say, the changes in the second half that Sarri made eventually with Rabiot and with Dybala, I thought helped, and Douglas Costa to a certain extent. I thought helped for them to go back in the game when they were 3-2 down, scored the 3-3 goal, but they could have still lost it, as you said, towards the end. I mean, Szczęsny made that incredible save in added time on Burabia, I think it was. But it was just, I don't know. I was amazed by the lack of control, as we said, in the game. I was amazed again that they conceded three more goals after the two against Atalanta, after the four against Milan, that they seem to only score on set pieces, whether it's a penalty or a corner or a free kick or something like this. And I'm just worried. I'm just really worried for them. I don't know what Sarri is trying to do. I don't know where they're going. And the only reason why they're still 6 points clear of Inter is because Lazio, Inter and Atalanta, to some extent, clearly don't want to win Serie A this season, because if they hadn't dropped all those silly points, I mean, Inter
there's
lost
6 points
to Bologna.
Clear of Inter, by the way, if Inter win.
Yeah, if Inter wins against Bayern, which you're right, it's not a given tonight.
Not something to take for granted.
But when you think about Inter's games and the way they lost to Bologna, for example, and all those points that they left behind since the restart, Inter could be leading Serie A right now. It's mental.
I mean, I have two big issues. I want to put them to you. One is Sarri would not a logical appointment in the summer, because leave Chelsea to one side, but when he did his best work in Napoli, he played very attacking football. He had a very dynamic team. You're not going to have a dynamic team if you have Cristiano Ronaldo up front. I mean, it's not a knock on him, but the dude is the age that he is, right?
Yeah.
So it seemed like such a weird, radical shift. That makes no sense, does it?
No, didn't. And we were surprised at this when it happened. If you remember, it was really like
it's like getting Sean Dyche to replace Pep Guardiola at Manchester City.
Exactly.
I'm not talking quality wise, but style wise.
Or Mourinho
to replace Pep at Manchester City.
Or to get Pep in Burnley.
He can't
make those players play the way
he wants. It's going to take time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Pep at Burnley, but then imagine that Burnley have mortgaged their future on a superstar who's
35.
Is in his mid-30s. Yeah. And on the first day you say, oh, well, it's going to be Ronaldo and 10 other guys. We all have to play around him. But the other thing, which I really have an issue with, is the squad construction. Yeah. Because I know they've been they've been in a tough spot accounting-wise and stuff. This strategy with the free transfers, this makes you think you're being clever. You're not, because you're bringing in people who make enormous amounts of money.
Yeah,
I mean, leaving aside the quality of the players, and I think there's a lot to be said about what Ramsey and Rabiot have offered.
For sure.
But you're paying an enormous commission. You're screwing up your wage structure. And what was the upshot? In the summer, Paulo Dybala has been Juve's best player this season, This is the guy that in the summer they were desperately trying to sell to Spurs, to Manchester United, and whatever. Mm. I mean, they went into the summer saying, we have to sell Dybala to make this work. And eventually Mandzukic left. And the other thing that they really need to think about, Cristiano, the narrative was Cristiano's the last piece of the puzzle to win the Champions League, so they got him a year with Allegri, right? Well, there was a last piece of the puzzle before him, and that was Gonzalo Higuain. Now, Gonzalo Higuain, at the time, given the amount of money they spent on him, 90 million euros.
Overpaid,
In light of his age and his wages, that became a gigantic burden, which is why you had the loans and everything. I think they need to seriously review how Nedved and Paratici do business.
Is Beppe Marotta leaving the club has left a hole that was always going to be hard to fill, I guess, and that they've left with, as you said, people in charge who either didn't have the same luck as he did at times, or the same knowledge, or...
See, So the narrative that people put out there is that Marotta left the club, that he didn't agree with the Cristiano Ronaldo signing, and blah, 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 and, you know, he was the grown-up in the room. I don't think that that's necessarily fair to just say, you know, Marotta good, Paratici bad, or Nedved bad, because some of these other, you know, signings on Emre Can and what, I mean. That was under his watch, right? Higuain was on Marotta's watch.
Yes, that's true.
So.
But it seems that it's gone worse since he left the club, though.
It certainly does. And you look at the young players. You know, Juventus are the only team in Italy that have a B team, right? An under-23 squad that plays in Liga Pro in the third tier. They said, oh, this is necessary. We're going to develop players, blah, blah, blah. Those dudes, you know, they never contribute to the first team. You never see them.
Yeah.
Right? Even before that, they don't. They bring. I mean, I think I could be wrong, and Juve fans, please correct me for my ignorance. But to find the last homegrown Juve player who really made an impact, you probably have to go all the way back to Claudio Marchisio.
Yeah.
They've had probably, a lot of people who've come through.
Or Moise Kean. Moise Kean, but obviously left. And I'm not sure if you
huge
can count
impact
it.
That guy made, right? Yeah. I mean,
No, but
who potentially could have been, right?
Yeah.
Now, as it happens, it was probably the right decision to let him go because he hasn't exactly pulled up trees at everything either.
True.
So I think it's a difficult one. And here's your question. Juve are going to win the title.
Yeah.
Right, let's take that as a given. Do you keep or sack Sarri based on the Champions League? Or do you just say, you know what, Champions League, single leg knockout, screw this, whatever happens, I either commit to you or I don't commit to you now?
I think you give him another season, and in the summer you really listen to him on what he wants and what his needs be. Even if he's Jorginho, I don't care, but you go and say, okay, if we give you one more season and one more chance, one or two seasons, you have to fully go for it. And so you have to get the players that he wants, that he feels can play in his system and in the way you want him to play, or you sack him.
What if he tells you?
You can't do another one where you're half and half. So you appoint him, and then you don't really sign the players that he kind of need and the profile that suits his style of play. You see what I mean?
What if you tell him? I think this is the terrifying part. What if he comes back to you and he says, well, you know what? You know, Jules Nedved, I'm a banker. I used to work in a bank. I know numbers. Between wages and amortization, we're spending 60, 70, 80 million, whatever it is, on Cristiano. I would rather, every season, I would rather have that money to spend on different players. Then what do you do?
It's a tough one.
That's a tough one.
But you have to let Cristiano go then. There should be a way, because he's not a Sarri type of player. So it's either you keep him and you get someone who get the best out of Cristiano and whose management and style suits Cristiano a bit more. But you have to choose between one or the other.
Tell you what, this story is going to run and run all summer. Juventus fans, as you know, are obsessed with Pep Guardiola. Keep an eye on that. Obviously,
true.
Pep's contract expires 2021. We don't know if he's going to extend the Champions League ban. The rescinding of the Champions League ban may mean that he stays. But that is definitely something to keep an eye on. Let's stay in the Premier League and let's talk some Liverpool, who won't be winning, who won't be breaking the points record.
They won't.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. So let's have a chat with Mark Ogden about this Liverpool not setting the record. I've said this before. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Might be a thing of pride or whatever. Records come and go. I don't think that's why Liverpool lost, because that they didn't care, because I thought they actually played really well and deserved to win this game, unlike perhaps some other games. But, Augie, I want to ask you, because there's a narrative put out in some quarters that because City are scoring a million goals and because they're winning games and because they had that big win against UEFA, whereas Liverpool are limping a little bit, that takes some of the gloss off. Are you on board with that idea? Which is not my idea, hasten to add, before Liverpool fans get angry with me.
No, I don't buy that at all. I think that's just a nonsense. I don't see how anybody with a sensible perspective can actually say that. Liverpool won the league by a country mile, basically. But for the they shut down the COVID shutdown. They'd have won it in record time. They may have gone on to get 100 points. You know, obviously the shutdown has affected their momentum quite a bit. The draw at Everton was clearly a case they looked rusty. So I think, look, at the end of the day, they won the first title for 30 years. That's all that matters. And, you know, as Roy Keane once said famously to Jamie Carragher, when you win the league, you get a medal. You turn it over. It doesn't say how many points you won it by. It just says you won the league. So,
oh, he's quoting Roy Keane.
Well, you know, I have to quote these eminent statesmen of the game. The guy won maybe 6-7 Premier League titles. But anyway, I digress. I think Liverpool will be remembered as a great title-winning side. And who cares if they get 100 points or 99 points? It doesn't really matter. You know,
it matters to Jules, though. It matters to Jules.
I'm the only one here who thinks it's important. And I also think that the players really wanted that record. I think they wanted to go 19 home games with 19 wins this season. I think they really wanted that record. And then, of course, you can think that maybe subconsciously you don't go into the games with the same desire and the same motivation and the same dynamic because you know you've already won it. And even if you want to keep winning to go and beat those records, there's maybe part of you who doesn't really go to the same extent than in a normal game, you know. But I really thought they would want to go for it and they would, you know.
I'm sure the players did, Jules. Look, we live in an era of stats now, don't we, where everything is kind of measured against something else. But who remembers how many points the Invincibles won when they...
I know, but you remember how many points City got. We've all been talking about those 100 points. Everybody knows City got those 100 points.
I think that achievement shouldn't be measured by points. It should be measured by other... You know,
that's true.
They're one of the lowest points tallies ever. So you're saying that because they ended up with like 20-odd points less than Man City did, they weren't as good a team, it wasn't as good an achievement.
True, but everybody remembers that they lost the title with 97 points last season for 1 point behind City. And I think we will always remember that forever, saying, oh yeah, that great Liverpool side that finished second with 97 points.
Yeah, but they won't do forever. You know, things move on. I think the achievements are what you get in your hands, what you can lift at the end of the season. And, you know, do you get a gold asterisk for getting 100 points? I don't think so. So, you know, let's just look at the league title. They've won it. They've won it well. They might win it by a record points margin. I think, is it 19 at the moment? 18 maybe.
Yeah.
So at the end of the season, they might have another record, but who cares? At the end of the day...
In fairness, I saw that club didn't really care when he put Shaqiri on for the last 20 minutes or 15 minutes. And I was like, okay, well, even if he puts Shaqiri on...
All right. Stop being mean to Shaqiri. Is there something poetic or is it just the weird, random cruelty of football that in the end they lost this game? A game that I thought they dominated. Yeah, we agree. They dominated.
Yeah, they deserved
to win.
They had 24 shots. Yeah. To three. Come on.
But they lost this game because of two individual errors by arguably their two greatest individual players. And I think I'm right in saying two of two of the top three most expensive signings ever. This is just one of these cruel, weird curveballs that football throws at us, right?
Yeah. You know, it's just one of those that nights, isn't it? We also have to factor in here that Arsenal do still have something to play for. They have to. They can still qualify for the Europa League via the league because they're still in the FA Cup, where that might not be the best option if they got Man City in the semi-final. So, you know, Arsenal want to be in Europe. They don't want to finish in the bottom spot in the Europa League because they'll have to go into pre-qualifier. So, Arsenal has also had places to play for at Wembley at the weekend. So, they had something to play for when they went on that pitch. All Liverpool players had to play for was this record that some may have wanted. So, like you said, they had 20-odd shots on target. They weren't that switched off, but the extra edge was with the Arsenal players because they did have something to play for. So I think it's just little percentages, and that's what matters in this game.
I think Van Dijk was kind to David Luiz and Kolasinac and Mustafi and saying, like, look, I sympathise with what you go through sometimes. I'm going to help you out a bit here and make a mistake. Same with Alisson. It was just one of those games. City have lost a few this season in the same way where they make a mistake at the back. They have zillions of chances. Don't take them and you lose 1-0 or you lose 2-1. And I don't know. I thought it was a good rehearsal for Arsenal. We were debating how they really played. They played with the back four or back three. But for the City game, because they had to be resilient because they were under pressure so much from pretty much the first minute to the last. And it would be the same on Saturday against City at Wembley. You know, they won't have much of the ball. They will have to try to exploit any single mistake that maybe the City defence or City midfield would make. And they would have to be very resilient and defend well and have a good Emi Martinez in goal, who I think has been really good since coming in for Leno. But for me, it would be a very, very similar game on Saturday for them.
I mean, talk about mistakes. If the Martinez clearance that hit Firmino went in.
Martinez!
God, yeah.
Martinez!
It, whatever. it would have been a different game. Liverpool would have won.
Yeah, of course. And then no, you're right.
So, you know, like, it's small details, but, you know, you talk about the game at Wembley at the weekend. I was at the Wolves-Arsenal game a couple of weeks ago, and it was a similar kind of game that I think it will play out at the weekend. Wolves dominated the game. Arsenal defended really well, which is something that you never often say. They defended really well, kept a clean sheet, and basically won with two breakaway goals. And I think they can do that at the weekend. I think they've definitely got the firepower, Arsenal, to hurt City, especially a City side that's got just one good defender. You know, so
all right, you keep saying there for Arsenal to... I'm going to say Kyle Walker around your house. Augie, thanks so much. We will no doubt reflect back on these big semifinals coming up this weekend.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Augie made some good points there. I think we need to revisit Arsenal in the coming weeks, though, because I love the whole Arteta experimenting, yeah, mad scientist.
Tactics.
I can't work
stuff.
Out his formation. I can't work out where these people are. Sometimes I haven't seen Arsenal in person in far too long.
Yeah.
I need to remedy that to see what the hell this guy actually does. On TV, you can't tell anything. Anyway, enough Arsenal. We've talked about them far too much. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester United play this evening, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is looking ahead to Sunday in the FA Cup semi-final with Chelsea. He says it's unfair as opponents get an extra 48 hours rest.
Why are you doing that voice?
Because it's unfair.
But he's right. He's right. It's unfair. Of course it is. Don't give me that it's not. When you've got two more days to rest, and when you've played Norwich as well, who never turned up.
That's unfair too, right?
That's unfair too. I can understand. I mean, where he has to be a bit realistic is this is a, as we said, extraordinary times. They had to fit all the games and all the schedule, and you could not always be the fairest, maybe in terms of scheduling when who
right.
plays and where and stuff like
and
that.
And they got to get the TV ratings in and whatever,
so
and balance it out.
He needs to understand that, but I can see
he probably does understand it, but he probably also says, "Hey, wait a minute, we are by far the biggest draw TV wise in the country, right? And so people exploit us, so." Hey, here's an idea for Woodward. Why don't you ask for more money?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Right, maybe, but I do think, I mean, I do think, and also he's played, you know, a lot of the same team because they were on such a good run, and he might rest a few people tonight, which
he
would
can't
be
really, though. Can he do that?
He can't, no, but that's the main, because good run and the needs of points as well. So I think those 48 hours, imagine you go to extra time on Sunday in the FA Cup semi-final.
Okay.
Could play
all
a part.
Right.
I
all guess. Right. All right. I always knew you were red.
Well, Manchester City, who also will be in the FA Cup on Saturday, beat Bournemouth 2-1 and rest a number of players. But Gab, what do you make of Pep Guardiola saying clubs should apologise to Man City and to Pep Guardiola after the CAS decision? And if they have something to say directly to the club CEO and chairman rather than whispering.
Okay.
I mean, I thought that was really petty, by the way, just before you answered, and we talked about it on the show. I thought he should have been far more humble. And I think all this lag is a bit petty.
Look, I think he overstepped the mark. I mean, look, and to be fair, Mourinho did too. So, I love it. I don't want to say they overstepped the mark. I don't have people talking about the way they feel, but you have to come up with legitimate arguments, right? Mourinho's whole argument about, like, well, but if they're not guilty, why were they fined? Well, you know what? They were fined for something different.
Yeah.
They weren't found guilty of what got them the 2-year ban, effectively, right? They were found guilty of obstructing justice. Yeah, and say that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And it's a record fine, I think, for this kind of thing. You know, I don't think it's anything to be proud of. Oh, look, you're not cooperating with an investigation. But hey, you know, whatever. People can draw their own conclusions. That said, I'm sorry, Pep. Are you a lawyer? Are you an accountant? Were you at the club when these things happened? No, weren't.
Yeah.
Okay? So just say, look, all he had to do was say, this is over. We've been judged by an independent court. I don't know exactly what happened, but I was assured by the club and the people above me who were there, who I trust, and they came out and said we would be let off. Okay? And they proved to be correct. So now let's go on because I've got the court judgment here. We're fine. Let's go on. when he starts talking about people apologizing,
that's now, crazy.
You haven't read the judgment. Nobody's read the judgment. It hasn't been published yet. We don't know what they should be apologizing for. And also, the reason people have this view is that City, like Paris Saint-Germain, as you know, breached financial fair play and they signed a settlement. You can say financial fair play is not fair. You can bring up Annex 11, all this nonsense, right? But this is why people have that view. And the other thing, this is the thing that really kind of got me going, is they shouldn't whisper. They should, you know, like, say it to my face. Say it to my face. You can knock on the door of the chairman or CEO of this club and ask all the questions you want. Say it to them. Well, I'm sorry. You can't do that. Because when people bring questions about this stuff to Manchester City, Manchester City, and it's their right to do so, have always said, we're not going to discuss this. They still haven't confirmed or denied whether the leaks were accurate. They don't. They go into silence. Maybe that'll change now that the case is settled. Maybe as long as they were exposed legally, they felt it was wrong. Maybe that'll change. But no, I'm sorry. Nobody had that option. Nobody's had the option to sit down to do what Pep is telling him to do. Oh, why don't you go and ask Ferran Soriano or that wonderfully named Jorge Chumillas, wherever he is, you know, what exactly happened? That's the whole point. These people didn't talk. And I'll tell you what, we'll find out when the written reasons are out. But if they were fined $10 million, it's likely that the club financial control body, those investigators, weren't able to ask them either.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe they asked them and they didn't get an answer.
And I just,
so honestly, Pep, just leave it.
Yeah.
Just say, look, I'm proud of the fact that the people in my club proved to be trustworthy towards me because they told me we would get off and we were proven right in court. Now it's over. Now let's just let it go. And he's right. And he's entitled to do that. But to go out and be like, oh, don't whisper.
That was,
you know,
really petty, I thought.
And you don't whisper because they don't say anything.
Yeah. And you know what? I even having a go at Arsene Wenger, and I was like, what? Really? And saying like, oh, he spent loads of money. Well, not one, he didn't. He never spent as much money as Pep did in the last 2 years or 3 years. And I just thought, like, okay, you could feel vindicated. And it's good. It's great news for you. It's great news for your club. No problem. You always thought you never did anything wrong, blah, blah, blah. Although we know that you did something wrong because you breached the rules 6 years ago.
And you signed a settlement agreement. You were punished for it. And it was over.
Yeah.
I mean, like, again, but you look at his legal and say, it's over.
Don't give me, like, I'm proud to win a case on technicality. Because we don't know yet. And you're right. And
we don't know if they won on technicality. We
but
don't know
they might have. And that was clearly the time bars was written in that statement. And I don't think there's any reason to be proud of if you win a case, whatever case it is, on technicality either.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to go now. We don't know the details here. But,
no, but
honestly, just,
you know,
leave
what I mean?
It. Because, you know, the other thing is, I think even City's biggest critics and people who hate City, I don't think people have come out and said, oh, look, City had the 100-point season and they play this wonderful football because they spent all this money. No, they do it because they've got people who work incredibly hard. They have incredibly smart people at the club.
A great manager.
They have an exceptional manager.
Of course.
And they play fantastic football and there's wonderful spirit and whatever. And that has nothing to do. You can't buy that.
No.
That is something that Pep Guardiola and the people at City have provided. That's not something they've bought.
Where do you think that insecurity comes from? That he needs to people to love him, to tell him how great he is all the time. Like, you know, we all want City in Europe. Yeah. Of course, the Champions League is a much better competition if City is in there with Pep and all their great players. And if they're not, and instead you replace them by Leicester. No offense to Leicester fans, but it's the truth. So I don't
maybe
know where
he would
that insecurity
do it with
comes
too.
From.
You know, maybe he would. But I mean, I don't know. I just want to draw a line under this and move on. And this sniping. This is one of the bad things. And this is going to happen again, I think, when whatever's in the written award.
Yeah, of course.
Is people's convictions will get even stronger. So on the City end, the fact that they did nothing wrong ever, that's going to be even stronger. And the fact that they're all crooks on the other side. And you know what? Nobody's read the freaking judgment. Nobody, very few people even understand this, have any idea of what happened.
Yeah.
And that is kind of what bugs me. But whatever. Real Madrid could win the Liga title this evening, but Jules, your boy Gareth Bale, and happy birthday, Gareth.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Is in the headlines again. Should the camera just lay off him
of
when he sits in the stands?
I would expect him to have something prepared already tonight against Villarreal in the stands. He knows he's going to be sat there for the whole 90 minutes because he's not going to come on. I think he knows that. I would be very surprised if Zinedine brings him on at the end, although that would be cool. But so maybe after the binoculars, after pretending to be asleep, drinking his orange juice, he might have something else prepared on the bench. It's his birthday.
Do you think this stuff is prepared?
Yeah, of course. I think the binoculars after the, you know, the pretending falling asleep, I think was prepared. He knew the cameras were on him. And you know what? This is really sad. I find it really sad. I mean, I know we're laughing about it, and I think he made it as a joke. And And but it's sad. He's a great or was a great player. He did some great stuff at that club. For whatever reason, he's in the situation he is now. I will always go for Zidane, obviously, but I just find it sad, this situation. But let's not forget that, as you said, Real Madrid can win La Liga for the 34th time tonight if they beat Villarreal or if Barcelona don't win their game. I think it will mean more to Zidane to win this La Liga title after the one in 2017 that he also won. But let's remind people that in the last 10 years, Barcelona won what, 8 or 7 or something like that, crazy. So it's rare for Real Madrid to win La Liga. And I think Zidane thinks that he will get the recognition that he thinks deserves, and I guess he's got a point, if they win this La Liga title, albeit after the pandemic and all of that, but to have shown that consistency, to have evolved in a more defensive side, I think he would really, really feel vindicated and proud of this title, maybe more than any of the three Champions League in a row, even more than the 2017 one. So I'll be glad for him, but I feel sad for Gareth Bale. Former Barcelona president Joan Laporta says that Xavi should refuse to take over the club if the Bartomeu administration is still around. That's a bit harsh, Gab.
Right, it's not harsh from his perspective because obviously he's been piling on Bartomeu all along. Obviously it's not going to be Bartomeu, but there will be a new president. Could be one of Bartomeu's surrogates. Yeah. Could be somebody else. I think Xavi should come if the right people are there and if he feels comfortable with those people. Obviously, it was the Bartomeu administration who reached out to him. Remember the famous trip to Qatar by Grau and your boy Eric Abidal. I think the tricky thing, if you're Xavi, is do you get drawn into the election or not? You know, do you take over, potentially, do you push to take over this summer? Do you wait?
Do you think that would be better than wait for the elections?
That question's above my pay grade. I think we need Sid Lowe and a big sort of Barcelona politics watcher to answer that one. More of all this good stuff, these quick hits. Chelsea defeat Norwich in a hideous game to take another big step towards the Champions League next season. But Jules, I'll let you praise the very handsome Olivier Giroud, who scored again.
Thank you, Gab. I'll praise him again indeed because, like you said, there was not much in that game. I mean, Norwich was so bad. And Chelsea did what they had to do by scoring and just winning. It's a cross by Pulisic. And before the game in the tunnel, you saw on the camera that they were talking and Giroud said, yeah, just put the ball that way. And they did exactly that. I think he's 6-10 now for Giroud. And you know what? You might not like him as a player, and I understand it. You might prefer more technically gifted, more talented players, and there's strikers, and there's plenty of them. But in what he does, he's the best in the world for me. At 33 years of age, to come up with those huge goals for Chelsea after not playing almost in the first half of the season, never giving up, always being a good professional, always training well, just waiting for your time. I mean, imagine if he'd gone to Inter. For all we know, Inter season and Chelsea season could have been very different. But he stayed, not because he wanted to, but because he had to, because Chelsea didn't let him go. And now I'm just so glad, in a way, to see him being so important for that team, and especially if they finish third or fourth or in that top four, and maybe even win the FA Cup. I think he would have played such a big role that he would deserve a lot.
It's a wonderful Valentine for Giroud. But I broadly agree with you. The one thing which was weird too is his goals per minute has always been very high, even at Arsenal when they all decided they didn't like him anymore. And the other thing is, he's a really smart player. He's a really unselfish player as well. And he also sets up a lot of goals.
Yeah. And the celebration was great. The Scrabble, nothing else. I'm telling you, it's not sign me on for longer or anything like that. It was just he plays Scrabbles with N'Golo Kante, who, by the way, cheats a lot at every ball game.
Oh, don't say N'Golo Kante cheats.
It's true. Especially at Uno and cards. He cheats a lot.
But how do you cheat at Uno?
Well, I think
how is it possible to cheat at Uno?
He might drop a few cards from what I was told, maybe. Okay. NG, if you're listening, hit us up. But no, but Giroud is very good at Scrabble. He's got loads of good words with him. Speaking of clubs chasing the Champions League, Gab, it wasn't a great day for VAR. What did you make of that late penalty decision that saw Wolves drop 2 points against Burnley?
Right, so first of all, I think this is a real body blow. And I don't want to get conspiratorial, but Wolves have 2 points less than they should because of this. Sheffield United, of course, have 2 points less because of the goal that never was.
Yeah.
And, oh, look, these were teams that were, you know, outsiders, if you will, gunning for.
I'm not, but conspiracy, yeah.
I'd be angry over this. That said, I wish the referee had done an on-field review.
Why? Just tell me why. Because I was shouting on the TV, go and see.
Go and see it. By yourself. Go and decide. I'm not going to come out and say it was definitely wrong because, look, there's a part of me that says when Wood goes to do the overhead kick,
yeah.
He doesn't know where Doherty is.
No. Nope.
He thinks he's there by himself. It's not a dangerous play where you do an overhead kick, you know, and the defender's right next to you, right? Doherty goes in, goes towards him, sees the overhead kick and puts his arm out and yeah, and the ball hits him and it's a penalty. So I don't quite know the dynamic there. I'm not qualified to say that. I'll leave that to referees.
But Doherty could protect himself, right? You could think that lifting his arm and his elbow is also to protect himself from the overhead kick. He sees the boots coming out and you don't want Chris Wood's boots in your face.
No, you certainly do not. You certainly do not.
I don't know.
All that said though, Wood missed that sitter earlier. So,
yeah.
You know, would have been better if we hadn't had to deal with that whole situation. Atalanta rest a number of starters and only destroy Brescia 6-2. Jules, they have 93 goals in 33 games. You have to go back to 1950 in the Milan team with the Grenoli front line. Yeah. A real old school. This was years before I was even born, despite the fact that I'm old. Gunnar Gren, Gunnar Nordahl, Nils Liedholm. Mm-hmm. Liedholm becoming one of the greatest managers in Serie A history. Great World Cup player. Gunnar Nordahl, I think, was the second highest goal scorer in the history of Serie A.
Yeah.
That's where they're setting the bar. This is just tremendous fun, tremendous story. Is there anything to be learned by other clubs?
Yeah, there's loads of things that, you know, if you have a manager with very strong philosophy, especially attacking philosophy, it's so much better for you. If you've got players who work hard, are disciplined and are also very intelligent, it helps you a lot. If you have a good academy, although maybe a bit less now than it was a few years ago, but still that helps you. If you have a very good scouting network and you do your homework very well when you recruit a player and you go and get people like Gosens and Atebo and Malinovsky and all those players in leagues that are not the top
leagues. We're all repeating ourselves, but I want to get you on Gosens because you mentioned him. And admittedly, he's German, but here's a stat that I tweeted out because you saw that, right?
Yeah.
So Gosens has more goals plus assists than any defender in Europe. One more than Trent Alexander-Arnold. Let's be clear. It doesn't mean he's better than TAA.
No.
But people got... This is the part which for me just... People don't really understand what football's become. People fire back and says, oh, but he's not a defender. He's a wing back,
he plays
right?
as a wing back, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sorry. What does Trent Alexander-Arnold do? Yeah, I know it's a back four. But when Liverpool have the ball, which is most of the time, he plays... I'm exactly the same position as Gosens.
Yeah, you're right.
So it's not going to impact what they do offensively. You don't normally score goals and provide assists when you don't have the ball when you're defending.
That's very true.
It's just funny to me how these people don't seem to understand that fullback is an attacking position in the modern game.
Yeah. And Gosens has been fantastic, as Trent has been, but it's for the play, if you don't know those players and you watch Atalanta, you're like, wow, who are those world-class players? And it's because the system works so well, the manager is a genius to a certain extent, and they're so good. And I tweeted this during the game, and then we were on the show together. I'm worried because they play PSG in less than a month. They look so good going forward. I still think their case for PSG to beat them and to exploit their flaws, because they have also weaknesses, they concede goals and they concede chances, which is normal because they're so attacking. But when they press you and when you can't get out, it's a nightmare, as we saw with Juventus. And Brescia are really bad. I mean, they're the Italian Norwich, really. Especially when Tonali's on the bench, which was probably the right call to make as well.
And no Super Mario.
Yeah. But Atalanta were fantastic and was a very special team this season. It's the best team in Serie A. We agree on that. And they're not going to win the title,
they're the team of the season, I'd say, yeah.
Roma grab another win, but Gab, a game after scoring again and coming back from that long injury, the wonderkind Nicolò Zaniolo is on the naughty step. What happened?
Apparently he wasn't making the right runs and stuff.
He came on, for like the last 25 minutes.
And Paolo Fonseca says, I didn't like the way he played. I love Fonseca being so honest about his players and knowing what buttons to push. Like, the guy's a kid. He's just come back from injury. He'll learn. I'm not concerned about him, but I'll give you another Rome-based freebie. Lazio obviously dropped points again. They're done. They're spent.
What's going on there?
Apparently, one of their big arguments is over the team's nutrition, and they have a new nutritionist who, among other things, said has banned all fruit except for apples, which I don't quite get. And so some people are blaming the lack of non-apple fruits for their decline. I don't know. I think it's simply not a big squad, and we're probably overachieving before.
Yes, definitely.
Harry Kane reaches 200 goals for his Tottenham career, but Tanguy Ndombele is unhappy, so I'm sure you'd rather talk about that. Right, Jules, rather than celebrating the hurricane?
No, I'm happy to celebrate Harry Kane 200 goals in the club. It's amazing, really. I still think, and I've said it on Monday, and I will say it again, that the lack of service is mind-blowing. I mean, that first half, I felt sorry for him. I really did. I think I looked at the start at halftime. He touched the ball 13 times. He had no shot, no shots on target, no shot blocked, no dribble, nothing. There was just nothing in that first half. And yeah, he scored two goals late. One again is the rebound of the keeper's save. I don't know. I think he's an amazing striker, one of the best in the world, and I don't understand why you don't serve him more. But anyway, that's another issue.
Now you talked about Kane so long, so we don't have to hear about Ndombele whinging and whining.
Ndombele is injured, which is an injury that suits him well at this time of the season, because he doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to play for Mourinho anymore, as I wrote before on the website. Although he'd come on in a couple of games for the last half an hour or something, but he doesn't want to be there. I don't know how this will be resolved. I would think he will leave the club this summer, going on loan somewhere or whatever. But after such a big investment on him a year ago, to see his year at the club is incredible, really, because I think he has very special talent, but he needs to mature, and I just don't think that his relationship with Mourinho could be fixed anytime soon anyway. Another win for Milan, 3-1 against Parma, but we saw grumpy Ibrahimovic at the end.
He was having a go at some of his teammates and stuff. And
he didn't score, by the way, either of the three goals, so maybe he was not happy.
Might have been it. It's just funny. He's in this weird limbo where I think he would want to stay. I think, though.
Do you?
I think he would want to, yeah. I mean, but then equally there's the issue with, I don't know if he wants to take a pay cut to stay. I don't know if the club want him to stay. You know, they came out and said, oh, even when he's angry and he's disruptive, it's still a positive because he's such a winner. Yeah. When you hear that kind of language, I think it's obvious that the club are ready to move on from him. Portugal have crowned their champions. It's Porto. Which isn't really a surprise given Benfica's implosion. I wanted to see a title race, Jules.
I know, but I mean, Benfica was 7 points clear when the restart happened, and they just blew it completely. Bruno Lage messed it up big time. The players as well, of course. Then he got sacked, and then Porto took advantage, and Sergio Conceição with the 29th title for the club. And I think what gets me excited the most is that they've got this young generation of players from their academy coming through. We saw Fabio Vieira with an amazing game yesterday until he was taken off in the second half. But he's 20. If you don't know him, go and check him out. He's a wonderful, creative playmaker type. So elegant, so good on the ball, with a great intelligence and vision. And it's great. And they've got not just him, but loads of those young kids coming through. And I think the future is really bright until they leave, which is going to be very, very soon for some of them, because they're so good. But yeah, I think really good time to be a Porto fan and a Porto player. And finally, Gab, Napoli are held to a draw, but Victor Osimhen and Gabriel are still in the headlines. Are Napoli serious, or this is Pepe all over again?
I don't know. You tell me. The hallmarks are all there.
Yes, he's going to go there.
What? Osimhen would be a huge, in some ways, Osimhen makes more understandable, because obviously Milik's contract is winding down. So you figure you put Osimhen in that salary slot. The Gabriel thing, they have a fair amount of money tied up in center backs. Obviously Koulibaly, Manolas, and Maximovic. Yeah. So I would guess that if they have a buyer for Koulibaly, if they know he's definitely going, then you do this. Or for Manolas, who didn't have a great season, but I think is tremendous. As you know, he's the Greek god.
Of course.
Who destroyed
Barcelona. But Gabriel is much younger than any of them.
Totally makes sense. But we've seen this before.
True.
You know, you might shed some light on this. I read that Gabriel changed agents as well in the middle of the deal.
Yeah.
Any hint?
I don't know. I don't want to speculate. And with the role of Luis Campos, our friend Luis Campos there. I've heard that the Osimhen deal especially is really messy in terms of who gets paid and why and how and all of that, which on an 80
are
million.
Are we going to see these guys at Arsenal? You know where I'm going.
No, I think Osimhen will go, and I think he's, although the Premier League was his preference, I think, I think he could do so well in Serie A for Napoli as well, and I'm really excited. I think what I like the most is that Luis Campos saw him in the Under-17 World Cup 5 years ago, kept following his progress. Then they signed him, obviously, last summer to replace Rafael Leao, who left for Milan for 12 million euros at Charleroi in Belgium. And then a year on, you sell him for 80 million. I think this is incredible. It really, from finding a player 16 or 17, right, you know, following him through, getting him, playing him in Ligue 1 for just one season, and then making eight times or seven times the price that you bought him 12 months before, is just incredible. You are, whatever way they're doing this, and it might be a bit of a dodgy deal or not, but I think Campos deserves so much credit for those kind of things.
Let me help you out. Osimhen goes to Arsenal. Aubameyang and Pepe go to Napoli.
Oh my God!
And Gabriel goes to Arsenal, becoming the second greatest center back in Arsenal history, named Gabriel,
yeah,
for the time being.
Yeah.
And Sokratis moves to Napoli as well, where he forms an all Greek Mount Olympus back pairing with Manolas.
Manolas, yeah.
And Koulibaly goes to Manchester United.
Wow! Yeah.
You're all sorted.
You've heard it first. You've heard it first.
No. Pure speculation. Pure speculation. Please don't get excited. Making all this stuff up. That brings us to an end. But we'll be back on Monday, where we'll be talking some FA Cup. We might even have the written reasons and the cast verdict for those who like long, boring.
Yeah, we will have the Spanish champion, whoever that is.
We will have Monday a new Spanish champion. Yeah, yes.
For sure.
Quique Setién to turn it around. You heard it here first. Till then. Bye-bye.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.